CliffCentral.com. We're ready to start another episode of The Burning Platform this morning. CliffCentral.com. Welcome to you if you've just managed to get up and get going and join us. We are, as always, joined by the lovely Pumi Mashiko, the sometimes lovely Canthan Pillay, still sporting his enormous Movember moustache. When do you get rid of that? The end of this week?
Well, that's the theory, yes. Well, actually, I don't get rid of it. What you can see is that the rest of the beard is now starting to grow back into place.
Yes, now you quite...
Which was always the plan.
You do look quite distinguished, Canthan, so we'll maybe we'll keep that for a while.
In this country, it's not difficult to look distinguished, Gareth.
And we're joined by a guest I had on my TV show not so long ago, So What Now? In fact, he was on last week, Lito Ntoba. He is a lecturer at the Central University of Technology. He's a debater and a social political analyst. So nice to see you, Lito. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Gareth. I'm glad I can be on the show.
Yeah, it's great to have you back, and well done on being on the TV show and surviving that whole episode, because this is...
Yeah, where is the Central University of Technology? You know, when I saw that, I started abbreviating in my head, and I said, C-U-N, and I said, no, that's wrong. Okay, let's go back.
Please don't talk about my university like that. So the university has two campuses, on Bloemfontein and in Welkom, so I'm on the Welkom campus.
Okay.
Is it still called Welkom? Surely they've renamed it to something else.
Hey, Canthan.
What? It's still Welkom. Please leave my town alone, by the way. They were very happy. I was very happy that I was on TV. So please don't.
Okay, all right.
Don't dismiss their good character.
I won't put ideas in their heads.
All right, listen, everybody. We've got to start off with something Pumi and I raised a little earlier on, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. We are going to hear a lot of lip service paid to women and children over the next 16 days of activism. I can't stand this anymore. It almost makes it worse when you hear politicians giving people these platitudes. I'm sure that you all have strong feelings on this, but I think other than to do what we're going to do this morning and hopefully just touch on the things that we think really can be done, I don't want us to be paying lip service to it, but what do you think of 16 days of activism? Should we just put this thing to rest now because it's doing nothing to improve the lives of women in South Africa? Or is there still some reason to keep it going? Is there still a way it can make a difference?
No, there are great reasons to keep it going because advertising keeps the world going around. The corporates at this time of year will spend relatively large amounts of money virtue signaling to the rest of the world. That's money that flows into the economy, and at the end of it, that's all good. So I'm very happy for them to keep doing it on that basis.
Okay, not at all cynical. How about you, Lito?
For me, I hate it. It's become absolutely disgusting, and to a point where it doesn't help women at all, right? Mm. It now has nothing to do with helping women. It's about these larger-than-life characters who want to become relevant by bringing up issues of women and whatever. Mm. And all the issues that hit women the most persist throughout the year and even through this time. And so if nothing changes with your advertising, if your political twerking does nothing for the people on the ground, it doesn't really help anyone to assume or sort of lie about changing things. It's not about changing things now. It's about giving a stage to people who normally just never care anyway.
And the only woman on our panel this morning, Pums, how do you feel about this?
She's, you know, Gareth's assuming my gender again, Pumi. What can I do?
All right.
I'll reserve my comments on this one.
Really, Pums?
Yeah.
Over it.
This irritates me beyond. So on the first day of the 16 days of activism, mm-hmm. we are hit with the news. We wake up to the news that a certain ANC cadre,
a provincial executive committee member, mm-hmm.
in the Northwest, who was arrested a couple of weeks ago on the allegations that he and his stepson raped his 12-year-old twin daughters,
Jesus.
Is given a light bail, conditions, similar to a certain pastor who's since skipped the country, so that he can continue serving the party. And then he promptly gets put back into the PEC of that particular province. And when he comes out of the hearing, he is met by a cheering crowd of supporters. Now that, for me, is abhorrable.
Yeah.
By the way, this party has a women's league that is totally silent. It's infuriating.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. I mean, what can we even say about? Hang on. Have you guys lost some sound there? There we go. I thought we'd lost sound for a second. So, all right, Lito, let's get into some of the things you want to talk about this morning, because Pumi and Canton can hop on any issue. They're not afraid. But I know that there are some things that are going on in the news. And the Burning Platform, let me just remind you, is always brought to you by Nando's. This morning is no different. We're spicy hot today, as always. And one of the issues that Lito wants to talk about today is the state of journalism in this country. It's something that's a favorite topic of Canton's and a favorite topic of Pumi's. So, Lito, you haven't explained your point of view on journalism in South Africa. Where do you think we're at? And do you think that there is any kind of quality control?
I certainly don't think there's a level of quality control, because the journalism that happens in South Africa is mainly, it seems like part of like the gyre of weirdness that happens in this country, whether politically or otherwise, right? Mm. Because the quality control isn't there, but also the journalists themselves seem to be just like part of the trash, right? They're not as discerning and analytical as they should be. And so when you look at the various scandals, right? Even when you look at the SABC debacle, you see the debacle this week with the WhatsApp group. Starting with the WhatsApp group, I think South African journalists missed a huge opportunity to teach people about their profession, right? Instead, they became very defensive. They started blocking people on Twitter, which, by the way, they bemoaned when John Steenhuisen did it. And so it seems like they're not necessarily journalists the way we thought journalists should be. And so when that happens, the narrative around them, because they create narratives, and there's also a narrative counter to them that, oh, no, these guys are just part of the state machinery. Some of them are getting paid for. And they should have been reasonable enough to talk to people the way their profession demands, but they don't. And that, for me, was highly upsetting. And then lastly, like, the SABC debacle is a great big mess. I see why you left.
No, you know, Lito, I mean, you referred to two things here that are worthy of, and you brought up the second point I wanted to make yourself, the SABC. We saw that guy who basically went with a begging bowl to Luthuli House to try and get, he's the guy you fired from ENCA, isn't he, Canton? He went and...
Don't ask, don't tell, Gareth.
So he's the guy who...
You know, rats, ships, what can we do?
Yeah, well, clearly you were spot on there. I'm going to say it because you can't, but... My God.
No, actually I can. It's just that I choose not to. You know, the thing is that when you do have those scenarios and you act on basis of principle, but you don't talk about it afterwards. And I think, you know, that's one of the issues that we have right now, that some people actually put in these rules that are meant to ensure that the basics of journalism, who, what, where, when, why, and how, accuracy, objectivity, fairness,
right,
are put in place. But people don't do that. They just want to virtue signal about how they've been disciplining people, you know, giving them a public dressing down, like Barry Bateman being made to apologize for a comment that he made off camera that had nothing to do with his performing his duty.
So that the SABC part of it we'll get back to in a second, because that place, I just don't know. I don't know how or why they continue to operate. Someone should just go in with a, you know, like you put an animal out of its misery when it can't get up. You know, that's kind of what we have to do there. But the other thing that you refer...
No, careful, Gareth. People are going to say that you're now referring to black people at the SABC as animals.
Yeah, well, they're welcome to go back and check the context. Here's the deal, though. The other point Lito made is maybe something that they're taking their cue from journalists in America, because a lot of our journalists look up to journalists in America, and there are journos in America. You guys can correct me if you disagree, or we can have an argument about it, but there are journos in America who pretend to be reporters, but they're actually party agents. They're actually party hacks. A lot of them call themselves fact checkers. A lot of them call themselves experts or commentators or analysts. Let's be clear. If you're going to say you're a journalist, you should try at very least to be objective. If you're an opinion person, we're expecting you to give an opinion. If you're an analyst, as the four of us this morning are, in the guise of certainty, we expect you to take a position on something. But a journalist actually isn't meant to do that. And you saw during the entire 4 years of the Trump administration, nothing but partisanship. You saw people in the Fox camp or in the Daily Caller, the Daily Wire, the OAN, which is even more right-wing than Fox, if you can believe it. Those people were 100% behind Donald Trump every step of the way. They were in complete lockstep with him. And then you have the rest of the mainstream media, including, you know, lots of places that claim to be objective, the MSNBCs and the CNNs, who say we're objective journalists, but they not once relented on showing off what their point of view was. And I think that that's got to be made clear again if we're going to clean journalism up and if we're going to have people who are truly objective, who are fact checkers, who care about the truth. I think we've all gone astray, and it's not just South Africa.
Look, I think the point that was made, that there was an opportunity missed here on bringing all over the world, media is growing. Here in South Africa, it's declining at an alarming rate. People, newspapers, magazines, shutting down across the board. And part of that is because they've lost their credibility. Mm. They've lost the credibility with a lot of us. A lot of listeners, viewers, readers can no longer trust what is in the publication. I mean, if we look at what's happened at Independent, at IOL, which has basically become Iqbal Suve's mouthpiece for everything that he believes in, right? And so we're kind of going, why? And also breaking news is no longer where news is. So, no, because, I mean, you get it on Twitter. Everybody wants to break the story first. So by the time a publication has gone to print, by the time, and that's why we see so much of this happening here in South Africa as well, where people have decided that they will rather mine Twitter accounts for headlines and stories and facts of a particular thing. And that's what has eroded it over time.
Hasn't Twitter become a proxy for all of these journalists in some way?
But that's true. The Twitter thing for me is the biggest slap in the face. Like a bona fide publication would go and tell you what happened on Twitter as a recap. Like, what are we doing, right? Where is the journalist then? If I'm gonna wait for Gareth to say something on Twitter and be outraged about it and report on it in a publication, so where's the journalist then? Then it means that some guy in Belcom can do that, right? And so that's why people are buying out. I can do that. So why must
What's
I go and
the
pay?
Guys in Belcom?
No, listen. Gareth will invite me for that. That's another story.
Let me just while we're on Velcom, let me just point out that I know only a few things about Velcom. Number one, you guys have a shit ton of traffic circles. Number two, you have a lot of churches. Number three, everybody there, instead of going out and having a good time, they go out and fight. Am I right on all three?
No. They fought when you were here. I remember why you're saying that. I remember there was a fight when you were at a baseball sportsman way back in the day. That place closed down because of you, by the way, Gary. So, for real, after the fight,
you found it, cancel culture. Well done.
After the fight with Gary the Cliff at Sportsman's closed down.
Let's be clear. There might have been a fight, but it didn't happen while I was there. I had left long before that. And I was not involved in any fight.
No. Legend has it the fight began because of you. So I can tell you, me, I was in the mix. The fight happened because there was Gareth and a blonde girl. I can just say that.
All right, I don't know about that. We'll see.
This is exactly the thing about the journalism in this country, right? Now we're listening to legends here as if it is fact.
Yes, correct. You're absolutely right. Thank you, Pumi, for bringing it back to reality. Okay, I don't want us to carry on all day talking about journalists. They should really be the ones who are worried about
their profession. Well, I just want to pick up on the one point that Pumi made just now with regard to IOL and the independent group in general. And, you know, a point that I made a while back is that we need to understand that every one of these media organizations actually carries a grain of truth in them. And we need the ability to be able to see when they are pushing a line that belongs to their owners and when they are pushing the truth that's directed at an opposing faction within the ANC. And the fact of the matter is that if you look at the independent group over the past couple of months, it's been one of the few sources of information in terms of what's actually been going on within the Ramaphosa camp.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be aware of those dynamics all the time. You know, so you understand once you understand where the power dynamics are, then you'll see that independent is roughly supporting Zuma / Ace Magashule. You know that that Naspers is essentially supporting Ramaphosa because the CEO. Puti Manyela used to be the chief executive of Ramaphosa Shanduka Group.
Ooh,
okay,
so we do. The land you went to with Kevin.
Let's not go there. Okay,
yes,
right. And you know, take the view that the chief executive of MTN is the son-in-law of Gwede Mantashe. You know, so once you start, you mean. Yes, thank you, Pumi. So, you know, smack me over the head. MTN, I take back some of the things I said about you. Yes, the CEO of MultiChoice is Gwede Mantashe's son-in-law. So, you know, you connect all the dots in terms of where the various media interests are. And at the end of the day, there's a couple of purportedly independent spaces. And this is, you know, clearly the most independent space of the lot because it's basically Gareth. Now, if you consider the other players that are left, I think Alec Hogg is quite trustworthy based on the fact that he doesn't actually play any sides.
Yeah, but I just want to again say that we're not a news organization, CliffCentral.com.
Absolutely right. But I think the point that needs to be made, Gareth, is that there's nothing within the structures of CliffCentral.com that indicates any political influence whatsoever in terms of ownership or in terms of management or where funding comes from. You know, we're quite open about the fact that Nando's is the sponsor of this show, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to where is the money coming from that's going into the Times Media Group. So,
speaking of money. Money and where it comes from and where it goes.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that they're not telling the truth sometimes. We just need to work that out.
I like that, yeah.
You always have to find the fault lines.
Yeah.
You do. You have the fault lines, and it's one of the things we talk about all the time on the show, that you need to look left and look right before you cross any one of those roads, right? So the landscape is like that too. But I just want another short ad break here, guys, to watch the Concord rulings coming out today, because they are going to be making a ruling about certain funds of a certain political campaign and whether there was overreach by a certain public protector.
Okay, now let's just fill people in case you know, Lito doesn't know this necessarily, unless he's been listening to you. Pumi is she's not a huge Cyril fan, and she has but it's true, Pums. She's not a massive Cyril fan. She's always been a little bit suspicious of all the Ramaphoria that's been going on around her. And obviously with Busisiwe Mkhwebane, and we've got to talk about the fact that Tony Modise also said that there's a three-member panel that will decide on whether or not Busisiwe Mkhwebane has a case to answer for, And that's going ahead at the same time. And there's, you know, Constitutional Court Judge Besigye Gabinde, who will probably head that up. So that's also going on simultaneously, right? There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yes.
Yeah, but
thinking of all those announcements.
Lito?
Yeah, but if trying to figure out who the Rubik's Cube that has been built out to be Cyril is, and Pumi is not a fan, then probably I'm with Pumi in this, right? Because at the end of the day, like, those party fans, Buthisiwe Mkhwebane, for me, at times is very strange about how she does her job. Mm. And so I'm not fully in support of her. But when it comes to Cyril Ramaphosa, we have to know as a country where this guy's motivations come from. Like, he's a very, very strange leader because of the fact that he's a reluctant leader, by the way, of the ANC. Yes. Like, he didn't come out and volunteer. He had to be coaxed out of it. And so, like, his motivations definitely have to come from the money side, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the side he seems to be defending the most. And so that scares people like me, especially people who are not in the fray of this money game. It scares people to then say, where does this money come from, and why is there such a huge secretive nature about the money? And I think that's the scary part about Cyril in this whole thing.
Can I ask you guys about something completely unrelated that's been coming up on my Twitter feed over the last 24 hours? It's very, very odd indeed. It appears Julius Malema faked his own. He did his own Jussie Smollett over the last couple of hours. He faked his own. There was someone who supposedly sent him these messages. I'm going to kill you. Use the N word. Use the K word. We know where you live. We know where your family live. I'm coming after your wife. Coming after your child. It was a really abusive, horrible thing that was put out, and he put it out on social media himself and said, "Look at the kind of things that I'm being exposed to. Look at the kind of racism that is alive and well." And then someone, again, this wasn't a journalist, but somebody did the smartest thing, and it's so obvious, is you take that number of the person who sent this threatening thing, you put it onto, I've got that app here, what's it called?
True Caller.
You go onto True Caller, and you can see who the phone belongs to, and it turns out the phone belongs to Julius. So he was sending himself abuse and hatred and racism. There's something very, very strange about this. That to me, I want to know what the psychological component of that is.
So I've seen over the past couple of days, so yesterday was the peak of it, but over the past couple of days, Julius has been posting screen grabs of allegedly inboxes that he's received or messages that he's receiving, all of them threatening, all of them quite nebulous, but the one that he tweeted yesterday was a very long one, which was very vitriolic, and then it said with a number at the top. So you know how when you screen grab your phone, whatever, so it had the number, which showed an 071 number.
Mm-hmm.
And then, true Twitter fashion, right, everybody is in a tiz about it. So people are checking out this person, and then there was a guy whose picture was put up. So there's a person who put up a thing saying, with the True Caller saying, "Julius, this is your number," and somebody else put up an account fine. We still don't know what the truth is, right? And there was a Facebook profile of a young, quite a butch guy from Hillcrest in Durban that was put up. And it's one of those things that it's the murky waters of Twitter right now. I haven't seen what's transpired over the past 8 hours.
It's funny, I think I had that number for him as one of the numbers I had for him at one point, but I didn't realize until I saw it on the screenshot with Truecaller. So let's just assume, if it's real, if it's a real hateful, racist thing, then it should really go to the police. And it should be lodged as a case of threat and violence and imminent harm and all of that stuff. If it's him, let's just explore that a little bit, because I want to know what motivates a person to do this, just like I wanted to know with Jussie Smollett. What's going on there? Is it attention seeking? Is it trying to make yourself look like a victim for political purposes? What's going on there? If it turns out that it is Julius, what do you make of it?
So in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
In my opinion, whether or not it is him, right? Let's, on the one hand, let's say it's not him. Why would you focus on those things if you were Julius, right? And that's my opinion. Like, my why would you read them? Why would you allow that into your space?
Well,
it shows you one thing, that Julius...
I'm sorry, no. Lito, I don't know. I mean, if someone is threatening to kill you and your children, I think you have to take that seriously as a...
But that's what Julius wants. This is a classical Julius play, right? So we know that they are currently, the trick that they are playing is a polarizing trick, right? So they want a through and through, black people are being victimized by white people. Racism in this country is out of control. And he, Julius, with his fighters, are the only people that are going to be on your side against this terrible problem that we have. They have no other choice, right?
Yeah,
Jacob Zuma is gone. So they have no other thing to keep themselves relevant. And this is the thing that they have chosen. So he has to, this is what he wants. Of course, this is what he would concentrate on. So where there is a small specter of it, he's going to have to amplify it. This is what Julius wants. He wants people outraged, because that outrage he can use to keep himself relevant and propel himself forward. I don't know if it will work, because I think that his party has plateaued, but that's exactly what he wants. And the narcissism that goes with making yourself the center of this victimhood also. This classical Julius, guys. We've seen this. The guy calls himself the in-chief. Come on.
Guys, you know, we actually just once again buying into this entire thing of giving Julius more airtime than he actually deserves. But I keep going back to this. Julius is not the problem. The ANC is the problem. Ramaphosa is the problem. Let's focus our attention at the top of the pyramid and not at the barking dogs in the guarding the gates.
Okay.
No, but my problem is with Julius, right, is that you have to explain his motivations. If you don't, it blindsides a lot of people, right? A lot of people who have become disillusioned with the ANC, just don't like the ANC anymore. So with the whole thing, because if you look at it, that's exactly the strategy they've been doing with the whole so-called racist ambulance chasing, right? They take a small issue and react in this rage against the system sort of way. And so that's exactly what he's doing with the Twitter posts. You're taking this thing where you can simply just block a number or even just go to the police, like Garrett says. Why do you need to bring it to Twitter? Why do you need to show it to the people, right? And so he then takes the grand savior sort of thing of saying, you see, the reason I'm saving you and now I'm your Jesus, I'm dying for you, and I don't care if they kill my family, I'll still come and help you. And so we need to talk to those motivations. If we don't, We allow the polarization that is becoming ever more persistent to go on. So even though Canton wants to ignore him, ignoring people like Julius is very dangerous. Because just like Pumi says, the EFF has plateaued. And so now what does it do? It gets an invisible enemy, which is harder to defeat and is more nuanced to defeat. And so every single time, they will find something to add to the enemy. Today, they say, oh, it's the police that are helping the racists. Tomorrow is, oh, no, Gareth Cliff is helping the racists by having a show. Tomorrow it's somebody else. So now racism is a nice enemy to have. It's not a Jacob Zuma who can take you to court or play victim or has super on his side. Racism has nobody on his side. Nobody stands and says, I'm a racist and I'm here to defend racism.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be we have to talk about Julius's motivations in order to help people to navigate the spaces he creates with all that toxicity.
Yeah, Canton, I also feel like it's kind of important that if we don't address these things, there are lots of people who are extremely credulous and a lot of people who are extremely gullible too, and who fall for this stuff and are being led by the nose. And of course, their biggest problem is the current incumbent government. Of course it is. That's the thing that affects their balance sheet, their wallet, whether or not they can afford food this week. We know that. But these guys are agitating, and I often think that the EFF is performing the role of just being the left wing of the ANC in a number of ways, shapes, and forms.
Well, if you consider just stuff over the past week, guys. Now, let's take the example of the free flights for former ministers.
Okay.
As a single example of something that's more important to the people of South Africa than whether or not Julius is faking his own death threats.
Okay.
That's just one example. Let's take another very good example of something that literally has happened over the past week. Okay, so the first thing that happened was that towards the end of last week, there was an announcement that came from Signia Capital, as in Magda Vizirka's group, mm-hmm. that said that in Tito Mboweni's medium-term budget speech, he had actually dropped a bit of a bombshell because he had said that if you had an exchange-traded fund that was 100% exposed to overseas assets, you could actually invest in it, invest your pension fund in it, because then it counts as a South African asset. And so there are only two such funds. You know, one is actually owned by Signia Capital, and the other is the Satrix S&P 500 tracking fund. And suddenly you had a whole range of people who said, yes, let's seize the opportunity because we don't want to be exposed to the pathetic JSE. And they began to transfer their underlying pension assets into those two funds. And guess what happens? Now we have a media statement that gets issued 24th of November by the National Treasury, South African Reserve Bank, and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, which says, no, hang on a second. Wait, the circular issued on 29th October dealing with this reclassification is suspended with the immediate effect. Now, let me tell you what's happened in the background out here. Okay, it's the likes of Ashburton, it's the likes of Coronation, it's the likes of Alan Gray, all of these guys who are custodians of our pension funds and who have hundreds of billions, in fact, we're talking trillions of rands of our pension funds under management, suddenly seeing all of their money flowing to these funds that are exposed on the New York Stock Exchange and various other places, seeing that their underlying fee structure is going to disappear. And they've gone and put pressure on government, and government has once again kowtowed to the corporates. Now, this, again, is something else that is far more important than whether Julius is faking his own death threat.
Sure.
Okay, we get distracted. We last week, we had a whole show about that last week.
Yeah.
I told you, you missed out on a good one. That's what we
You know, we are so fucking stupid.
But
as a nation.
But let's take quickly what Canton just said, Gareth, right? Let's take those two situations that Canton just said.
Sure.
And then let's juxtapose it to Senegal. I just want to bring it back to my province. I know I'm bringing Welkom into the fray here. But you take those two important issues.
Sorry, just for clarity, did you say Senegal or did you say Senegal? Because
Senegal.
No. The name is Senegal.
Okay,
it's not Senegal. I don't know where the Senegal thing comes from. So let's take those two situations and then put it against Senegal. Now, Canton is saying that, and let's say I go into the crowd here in the Free State and start talking about what Canton is saying and try to break it down for the layman.
Mm-hmm.
Julius comes into the province because a lot of people were shocked by the large crowds in Senegal, right?
Yes.
Where does he get them? The unemployed young people of the Free State. My Ben municipality comes from 88% unemployment of young people.
Sure.
So you think about that. Julius comes in and says, the enemy is racism. The enemy is white arrogance. And what we also need is connected to what they're doing is the land. Their arrogance is underpinned by the land.
Mm.
Listen, Canton, you're going to break down that thing for days. And people would rather get onto a bus, go to Senegal, and go and confront the white enemy and his racism, rather than talking to the substantive issues that actually lead to their poverty, that are leading to the disarray of their municipalities and the problems that they face on a daily. Because what they have been told is a simple message. The problems you face on a daily are connected to land, dispossession, and whiteness. That's a much better message. And so when you don't talk to the motivations behind that message will always win. Because now when you talk about S&P 500, Listen, you've already lost half of my friends already.
Yeah, but Lito, you're laboring under the misapprehension that I care about your friends. I don't. You see, my entire view on this is, you know, it's like Pumi and I out in the Kruger Park on foot, and then suddenly there's a lion stalking us, and I take off my shoes, and Pumi says, "You're never going to outrun that lion," and I say, "No, I just have to outrun you." So take the same approach, okay, in terms of what happens in places like Senegal. Yes, Julius is going to be able to arouse that rabble. But as far as I'm concerned, my focal point is on people who are actually able to influence the course of events in this country. People who are actually capable of creating jobs, people who need to be aware of the underlying power structures that are driving these things, and how they can then influence the course of actually making change. And if we get distracted by the fact that Julius is going to be rousing the masses, it is keeping us from that core task, and it allows the ANC to continue to loot while we are distracted by these things.
So but the problem is,
brings us back full circle to what we were talking about earlier, because one of the biggest ways that people get their information through media is through the news channels, it's through the radio, yeah. It's through reading newspapers. And at the moment, our journalists are so distracted themselves by all of the smoke and mirrors that all that they are amplifying is that. So we don't have any diversity of views, diversity of information that's being talked about. And unless you are looking for it, unless you are looking to see what Magda is saying, unless you are checking out the statements that are being put out by the various agencies themselves, you won't even get to hear that. Why? Because today, I promise you, that people will be carrying the story of Julius and his tweets on the front page.
Can I ask you, Catherine, on your point about these ETFs and the circular and everything else, what can ordinary people do? Because it seems that we're caught between two competing interests here, and it's actually our money. It doesn't belong to these big investment firms, and it also doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to us. We're the ones who've spent, in many cases, 40, 50 years of our lives working for the money that we've saved and put somewhere we thought it was safe. And now everyone else seems to be having a bigger, better, more fun time deciding what to do with our money than us.
I don't know the answer to that, Gareth. Like I said, when we've talked about this previously, you try and seize every possible opportunity that you can to put as much money as you possibly can out of the reach of government. So one of the ways you do that is you directly invest overseas on the stock markets. You can pretty much do that by going online and buying shares in Apple and Google and so forth. And you do that with your after-tax money as far as possible. You do that by putting your money into things like cryptocurrency. Yes, you know, there's volatility and there's a possibility that you end up losing money in the long term. But if you do something that's called rand cost averaging, and I assume you've spoken about this on your crypto segments in the past, Gareth, but you know, the whole idea behind rand cost averaging is that if you put aside, let's say, 100 rand a month as an example into Bitcoin or Ripple or Ethereum or any of the other cryptos, it doesn't matter what the price happens to be at that particular stage, because the money to invest consistently on an ongoing basis averages out at a significantly larger profit than you would get from investing on any of these platforms that get provided in the country right now. I had, you know, for a couple of years, I took advantage of the fact that you could have a tax-free savings account that was exposed to the JSE. And I got rid of it, and I just took the money and sunk it into crypto instead. Why? Because when you adjust for inflation, when you adjust for the fees that the financial institutions take out of it, you actually end up with less money than you actually had. And it's really a question of educating people to get as much money as they possibly can out of the hands of government. And I keep going back to the drum that I've been beating on for a while now. We need to defund the government. We need to defund these large institutions. It's the only way that we eventually end up being able to take control back. But what you will find is that government will keep finding ways to try and interfere. The big corporates, which effectively are monopolistic, will keep finding ways to try and stop you from doing that. So this current example, this media statement that's been put out by Treasury and the Reserve Bank and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, this actually terrifies me because this shows collusion between the financial service companies and government at the highest levels.
Yeah.
And the sooner we recognize we need to get our money out of their hands, the better it is. Ask yourself how many people take a look at their pension statements and see how much of the money gets siphoned off in terms of fees. And why do we need to pay those fees? We need to pay those fees because government says they can't trust us to actually manage our own funds.
Which is my drum. You got to educate yourself. You got to educate yourself and you got to make your own decisions. The information, we have more information at our fingertips today than any other period in human history. So you must educate yourself.
I agree with you, Pumi. There are stock fells that are run better than some of these investment companies and that provide
absolutely spot on.
And that provide better returns for the people who participate in those stock fells than any of these big investment companies could ever do, and certainly than investing in government bonds could ever do for you.
Yeah, my Christmas stock fell coming through just now.
Is it really? Are you on one or many? Two. Okay.
That's the safe option, to be on two stock fells.
I gotta get
in. A grocery stock fell and some money.
I gotta get on that. That's good. All right. Well, there are so many other things that I wanted us to refer to. Pums, have you been watching your favorite soap opera this week, the State Capture Commission? Anything new?
Absolutely. And you know who's coming on tomorrow?
Who?
The current mayor of Johannesburg.
Oh, really?
Jeff Mukhubu.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. And then this, we don't live in Belcom, we live here in Joburg, and the potholes are devastating, and the traffic lights don't even more devastating than the potholes, right? And so when our mayor is going on, which is why I watch the soap opera, right? It's important for us to know where this man's allegiances lie and what is behind, what is under the surface of this man. So it's going to be an interesting one. Jeff is on tomorrow. But this week has been EOH and the money flows and Zizi Kodwa. And you know what's astounding for me is we know a lot of these politicians are morally bankrupt, right? Mm. We get that. We've accepted that now. But it's always so astounding to find out how actually bankrupt they are, because they can't go to a bank to get a loan. They have to get small loans, smallanyana loans from all sorts of other businesses. And
I know, how pathetic is that? Huh? You know, how low are these guys' standards? You know, if you want to steal big, guys.
Learn from the
Guptas. That's how you steal.
Nobody learned the lesson.
You know, sorry, Pums, I always think about Nomvula Mokonyane and those big boxes of
chicken.
Meat, the chicken and the beef that they would drop off for her. And I think, you know, there's something kind of sad about that. It's like, of course, she's wrong to be involved in bribery and corruption and all the rest. But if you can get someone who's the Minister of Water and Sanitation, which is what she was at the time, if you can get her to do your bidding by sending her some meat, nyama, and not even a lot, just enough to fit in the chest freezer. I'm just,
exactly.
I'm horrified that it would be that cheap, that it's that easy to bribe a public official.
And those are the ones that always take the fall. Let us forget, guys, Tony Yengeni went to prison for a discount on a Mercedes-Benz, and people walked away
No, I must correct you on that. Okay, he did not go to jail. He did not go to jail for the discount on the Mercedes-Benz. Let's be very clear. He went to jail for lying to Parliament. The but discount was not the problem. About, he went to jail. About. No, it doesn't matter. It wasn't the about. Okay, he wasn't convicted of the corruption of getting the discount on the Mercedes. He was convicted on the basis of the fact that he lied to Parliament. That was the fraud charge.
Yeah, but Pumi.
Yeah, so no one has actually been convicted for corruption. Anyone who holds up Tony Yengeni as an example, no one has actually been convicted for corruption in this country.
Yeah, but Pumi, listen, I know everything about rotten mayors, right? And Jeff Makubi does have to answer for a lot. Where I come from, there's a sanitation plant that's covered to the roof in sewage. And so I get what you're talking about. And we don't have potholes because we don't have roads, right?
Translation, Velkom is a shithole.
Basically, Donald Trump. But let's look at it. Like, so what the EOH thing for me reveals is that businesses in this country, like businesses from outside the country, from inside the country, know the price of admission, right? Yeah. They know that they're dealing with hungry politicians. And Gareth, you know the issue with Nombula Mukonyane, right? With the meat. Let me just try to build up and show you why it's the saddest situation. She's the rich aunt in the family. And so when she gets the chicken, she distributes it in the family so that the family is grateful. It's for me, everyone has a price. If capitalism is right, then everyone has a price. The problem with South African politicians is that they have not set their price, right? They want to be the rich aunt in their family. That's why they're being corrupt. They're not being corrupt to be rich people, right? And so that becomes the problem for me. Set your price high so that we understand. So Zizi Kodwa seems to have been bought by everybody and with an occasional 15,000 rand or occasional 11,000 rand. Like Zizi Kodwa, if he had just asked everyone who has given him money for 2 million rand, would be loaded. But the problem is, he's getting money to survive. When Zizi Kodwa doesn't get paid by the ANC at Luthuli House, he calls a business person and says, hey, I didn't get paid. Do you have 10,000 rand? And I think that's the biggest problem in our country, is that even our politicians don't see that as moral bankruptcy. They just see it as them trying to eat. Sure. And that is going to be, that's you see, the level of incompetence grows because your bar is being set lower and lower as a politician in South Africa. And so when you get to the point of decaying municipalities, you get to see why the problem is there, right? Is that this lower and lower bar. And so a politician in a backward place is happy to be given 5,000 rand in order to sign for a tender worth 100 million rand. That becomes the problem.
Yeah. And of course, you live in a province where Ace Magashule has done his damnedest to set up everybody he could in various ways. I mean, we've got asbestos things. We've still got that dairy issue with the Guptas. God knows about the things that we still don't know about because we don't have an investigation into enough of this stuff. I mean, it makes living in a place like that much more arduous. And Pumi jokingly says the potholes and the traffic lights. But we are going to get to a point, and I think it's going to make South Africa even less equal, where people have to have their own water and electricity, and the rich will get those things because they will make a plan with their money. But the poor will fall ever further and further behind, and that upsets me, because if the ANC has stood for anything, it was for lifting up the poor in the beginning. Now it's about lifting up the people who are already in connected
places. A better
life
for all.
Now it's a better life for some.
Come to the Free State and you'll see horrific things. Mm. So things that haven't been covered by this province is the Chinese influence and how they've totally taken over the politicians in this country, in this province, right?
Yeah.
That's still going to be a very explosive thing. Like the level where this run security for Chinese run shops in small towns. It's to the level of utter incompetence. Like the biggest problems you guys are gonna see with the Free State is if you come to the Free State and you go to a suburb, you'll see the solar panels, you'll see people starting to generate their own electricity. And so that is going to become the big difference. When you get to municipalities like mine, where the account has been attached by Eskom, so they haven't been able to pay salaries. You know, they go and deposit money for salaries, cash,
yeah,
for each and every person.
Mm.
And so that's the level. Like we have no government anymore. We have a bunch of people paying each other salaries for no apparent reason. And so the lowest common denominator is now being recruited by the ANC, because there's inside the ANC there's a fear. If you come up with somebody who's going to clean the system, they're going to come and show that there is a sewage plant. Like, if you guys understand, they don't process sewage in Welkom anymore. If I flush my toilet, the sewage plant just juts the water out and it fills the yard over. So in a year, there's going to be no sewage plant to be seen. The evidence that we have a sewage plant is that you can see the roof because it's covered in sewage. We have people in Welkom who are capitalizing on this. They buy these sanitation trucks. They go and take out sewage so that it doesn't fill the drainage system. And then they go and they just, like, spill it out without any oversight in a field. And so that's going to be the problem, is that if you want to come and fix places in the Free State, you're going to have to take 20 years or so.
So it's actually literally a shithole. I mean, it's not just figuratively one. This is what you've just described. It's actually turning into a big dam of shit.
Yes. If you open water, if you open a tap in anywhere in the Free State, the liquid that comes out, I can't even call it water, is brown. So the Maluti Apokun municipality owes so much money, it would, with their current budget, it would take them 17 years to pay Eskom off. 17 years. Just to pay Eskom off.
Now, Nito, you and I are now talking the same language. Now you understand why I say we should not be worrying about whether Julius is faking his own death threats.
But Julius comes into Maluti Apokun and says, it's the whites. If we had land, then all of these wouldn't exist. He gives simple solutions to very nuanced problems. And a lot of people will buy that. If I'm unemployed and I don't have any hope, he comes as this great black hope that wants to heal me, right? If Kantan Pillay and comes and tries and explains the minutia of what is wrong.
No, the way in which I fix that particular problem is I tell people, look, this is what people did in Harry Smith. They went and they tossed out their government. They fixed the thing themselves, and it had nothing to do with racism. It was everything to do with that community coming together and sorting out their own shit, literally. They did. And that becomes the business model. CliffCentral.com